belonging to 32386141424 is full and cannot accept new messages at this time. To leave a callback number, press 5. Or please try again later.
What? Please tell me you're kidding me. Oh. It didn't ring?
Yeah, it rang. It just went to voicemail.
Didn't answer?
Yeah, it just went to voicemail.
That sucks. That'll suck. Let me see. You got a 323-806-1424?
Brian.
Yes.
Hey, man, this is Guy and Jeff with Church of Mavis, dude.
Hello, how's it going?
Going good.
Going pretty good, man. Definitely glad to have you on. Let me do a little intro, and then we'll start. Welcome to the Church of Mavis, everybody, with our guest, Brian Butler, Aleister Crowley, Tribute of the Beast, 666. So, Brian, I've been looking at your background for the last few weeks, and if you could, I noticed the Vincent Gallo thing. That's pretty cool. You got all kinds of little cool, neat little things going on for sure. Well, big things, not little by any means, but Vincent Gallo, that's pretty awesome, a short film, and you make movies as well. If you could just tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
I'm an occultist. And I'm a writer, and I make short avant-garde films, mostly related to occult experiences that I've had. And I'm a musician. And I played in, you know, several different bands, like no-wave bands, more like avant-garde type noise bands. I have a band called Technicolor Skull, which is a collaboration with Kenneth Anger.
Cool. And what is the event that you have coming up pretty soon too? It's an art event?
Yeah, it's an art event. It's a solo art exhibit, and I'm premiering my new film, which is called The Dove and the Serpent, which I shot in Normandy, France. And I'm creating these cubes, these magical cube sculptures, which could be in the space, and then there'll also be a performance at the opening.
Cool. What is, if you could tell us a bit about Lucifer, Story of a Cursed Film. I noticed that, and then there's an exclusive interview with one of the Manson family, Bobby Buscelli, if I said that right. I'm from Georgia, so probably not. But we've had Adam Go-Rightly on before about the Manson family, so I definitely find that fascinating. What about Lucifer Rising, or Raising Lucifer? Or Lucifer Rising?
Yeah.
Thanks, here.
Yeah, that's Bobby Buscelli from the Manson family. He a very talented musician. An artist. He committed what could be considered the first of the Manson family murders. But he collaborated with Kenneth Anger, before he met Charles Manson and started on this film called Lucifer Rising. This is in the late 60s, like 66 or 67. He had a falling out with Anger, and, legend is that Anger cursed him, and he left San Francisco in a van, and it supposedly broke down in front of the Spahn Ranch, and he got involved with the Manson family. And later in prison, after he was convicted of murder, recorded a soundtrack for Lucifer Rising. So Lucifer Rising took about 13 years to complete, and it has sort of a long series of bizarre coincidences and tragedies related to the production of that film.
Nice. Where can people find that film at? As far as
Raising.
Yeah.
Raising Lucifer. Right now, it's not in distribution, so I just show it at screenings. But hopefully soon, it'll be available to the public.
Cool. All right. Well, let's get into Aleister Crowley. First off, I hear people say his name in different ways. You have the Aussie way,
Mr. Crowley,
and then you have heard Crowley. Is it Crowley or Crowley?
Well, Crowley, to rhyme with holy, that is, supposedly the way that he pronounced it and the way that the people in various magical orders that follow his teachings swear by the pronunciation of Crowley. But
cool.
A lot of people.
I definitely just wanted to hear of that before we started. I thought it was Crowley, but I've heard people say it different ways. So, if you could, I want to know a bit about his upbringing and, you know, as far as his childhood and stuff. Could you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, his parents were extremely religious. They were Christians, but they were wealthy, so he was brought up, you know, well-educated, sort of English, you know, gentleman almost. And he, you know, I guess he had difficulties, you know, in that situation. And I think it was when his father passed away, he inherited a considerable amount of money and started to fund his publication of poetry and just, you know, mountain climbing expeditions and, you know, just sort of world traveling occult adventures.
So was his first organization that kind of started it, or the Hermetic Order of the Dawn, was that pretty much one of the starting points?
Yeah, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was his first organized occult experience, I guess, and as far as, like, he went through an actual initiation.
Yeah, it said, I got notes, after befriending the order's leader, Samuel Little McGregor Mathers. Is that order still around, or is that, what's some background on that?
In various forms, all of these orders are still around. There's always someone that is, you know, claiming to be operating these different organizations. But that actually, Crowley sort of ended that order when he published their secret rituals in his Encyclopedia of Magic called the Equinox.
Yeah, he was pretty pissed off at them, too, I guess.
Yeah, they, I guess there was, I don't know, jealousy, or, you know, he rose up the ranks really quickly, and then there was some dispute about his claim to the grade of Adeptus Minor. In other words, I think Mather, go ahead.
Okay. How did he, what's the story behind him taking on the name of the Great Beast?
I think he says that his mother gave him that title, the Great Beast 666.
Wow.
Yeah, he despised, you know, Christianity so much. I mean, he did anything in his power to irritate them. You know, he took great pleasure in that.
Yeah, that's a good point. He had a big part of Aleister Crowley is his sense of humor, and he had fun with people that were shocked or, you know, by Satan or magic, and, you know, through the press and just through his, you know, activities. It seems like he enjoyed upsetting people.
Yeah, because the tabloids back then were much worse than they are now. So I'm sure he had people, you know, following him around, and I'm sure he enjoyed all the attention. And you know.
Is that where some of this, I want to get into some of the gossip about him that I hear people say, is that where some of the sacrificing children stuff came from that I hear people say, oh, he sacrificed children, rah, rah, rah. What's the root of that? Is that some of, is there any source to that, or is it just him trying to upset
people? Yeah. Well, that mostly started, well, it's two different places. When he had his Abbey of Thelema in Italy, that's when the tabloid press really went with it. And someone did die there under sort of mysterious circumstances. And so that's when they really sensationalized what he was doing. But also in a book called Magic in Theory and Practice, he has a reference, sort of a cryptic reference to an occult ritual, and he uses the metaphor of child sacrifice there. So that's where, you know, and I get, again, his, that was his sense of humor. He said that he had sacrificed a certain number of children, but he really meant he had conducted this magical ritual, which did not involve, you know, literal human sacrifice.
Well, that's good. So here's another one that I find kind of humorous. I don't know if it's true or not, or if it's just hogwash, but a spy for the British government. Is there any truth to that one?
There's been books written about that. I think that he aspired to do that, but I don't think they ever took him that seriously. I don't think that he may have, like, known some people or, you know, reported certain things, but I don't know how high up he was or how seriously they took him.
Yeah, he was kind of a world player, world traveler. You know, he probably knew a lot of people in high places and would hear things, and, you know, I bet he hung with quite a few people in the British, upper echelons of the British, you know, country.
Yeah. Yeah, and he came to New York.
Go ahead.
He came to New York when the war broke out, yeah. And then he sort of wrote propaganda for Germany, so that's when the whole, you know, traitor espionage kind of thing started.
Right.
All right, so last but not least, here's one that I've had people actually come to the event and get upset about and leave and cuss. The Barbara Bush hogwash. Is there any truth to that? Which I hope not.
I don't think so. I mean, that's something that I haven't even bothered to look into. You know, it's just so far-fetched.
Yeah. There was a guy that debunked it from Facebook, Aleister Crowley, 2012. He, like, is doing a kind of a mock president thing for him, but he supposedly debunked it. But, yeah, people were coming in there getting upset and saying, he spawned Barbara Bush. So I was just curious on that one, for sure. So what is, as far as, there's some interesting things as far as, well, there's all sorts of interesting things from a paranormal, metaphysical aspect and occult aspect. But I noticed he claimed that he was contacted by his holy guardian angel, an entity known as Iwas. Hopefully I said that right. Probably not. But you know about that?
Yes, that was in Egypt in 1904. And he claims that over a period of 3 days, he received these chapters that were dictated to him for what became the Book of the Law. And that's where the phrase, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, and love is the law, love under will, these sort of phrases came from. And that became his sort of religion. was this book that he had received from his holy guardian angel.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. I mean, I'm actually reading it now, and it's he was either on some really, really good drugs, or he was, you know.
Well, sometimes really good drugs help you talk to anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know,
I
don't really see him you know, as a bad guy or anything. I mean, I see him as a philosopher a lot. Like, if you really read his stuff, like, you know, Socrates and stuff like that, I mean, he's really saying some amazing things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. He's well-versed in all the classic literature, and he expands on that in a scientific way. He was a serious person when it came to spirituality or philosophy. And I think he definitely tapped into something. In the Book of the Law, it's just so strange that, yeah, I mean, either he was in touch with something or took some drugs or somehow altered his mind where it's just like some other personality, a really foreign entity that's speaking through that book.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So where does Lamb fit in as far as the time period that he supposedly summoned Lamb, which, of course, that ties into a lot of UFO subjects. That, you know, people think it's an alien gray or whatever, which, you know, possibly it could be some kind of interdimensional being, which, of course, it is. But what time period did that take place?
That was in New York, and that was, maybe around, what year was that? Maybe like 1913 or something. It was before the Abbey of Thelema, and he had a period in New York where he was doing a lot of art, and that's when he was really experimenting with the sort of sex magic workings of the OTO, and there's a book where he records like his daily activities doing that. And during that period, he had a rather elaborate ritual which involved several people, and that's when he made this drawing of Lamb, but he never really explained it very much. That drawing just appears in the Equinox, I think, at the introduction of a Blavatsky commentary.
Okay, I have an audience question from Joseph Patchen. He wants to know about how easy the life was at the Abbey of Thelema, which I said that wrong, I'm sure. And he says, was it all happy debauchery or were there bummer days like everywhere else? And I also want to make note that I know that he has the religious philosophy of Thelema. How does that tie in with the Abbey and everything?
The Abbey was sort of like a realization of his vision of a community that was based on the law of Thelema. And in truth, it wasn't, it was, you know, I guess kind of a shack. And, you know, it wasn't luxury living at all. It was rather remote. And I guess he had a lot of difficulties. That's when he was experimenting, you know, like having several women living with him. And there was a lot of jealousy and a lot of, you know, drama and, you know, strange situations with that. So it was an experiment that, you know, it was, I guess, obviously the first time that was ever tried, and there were children there, and in the end, it's hard to say if it was a success or failure. I mean, it ended with him being expelled from Italy.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't Mussolini kick him out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Mussolini. Yeah, it was a little place. I mean, it's people still go there, and you know, they do their little rituals and stuff like that. And it's a little tiny place, actually, in the sticks.
Yeah. And he painted all the walls. He had his bedroom, which he called the Chamber of Nightmares. And you know, I think online you can find some photos of those walls when they were still intact. It's pretty intense.
So yeah. Why did Mussolini kick him out? I mean, because of, you know, just the rumors and stuff like that? Was there a specific reason?
Yeah, I think it was because of the rumors and, you know, the guy, Raoul Loveday, passed away, and the sort of press that he was getting in England brought him to the attention of Mussolini, who, you know, kicked him out.
Yeah, he was kicking out anybody who had any sorts of power or sway in, like, local towns. I mean, he went and he kicked Crowley out. He started killing all the mafia guys, and, you know, it was kind of a – I think he would have got kicked out anyway.
Probably got kicked out of a lot of places, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There was someone, I don't remember his name, but we had talked about him before just briefly on another interview a long time ago when we just were talking about Lovecraft, or I don't remember, with Micah Hanks. It was, and he said somebody kicked him out of their house or something because he said he was foul or something to that. Do you know that story? You remember that one guy?
Nah, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember hearing anything like that.
I'm learning here. If you don't,
I mean, I'm sure. Yeah,
no big deal.
I'm sure there was a lot of things with him that, you know, people just, you know, they just didn't get it. You know, and he probably went to a stuffy party with a bunch of people there, and people wearing monocles and stuff like that, and just, you know, talked about taking a crap or something, and they booted him out.
Yeah. So let me get to another audience question from Moshe Demon, which I'm sure that's his alias. He wants to know about the connection between Crowley and Jack Parsons. And he basically says the rocket scientist who apparently considered Crowley to be his father and mentor. I heard that they're part of the same OTO chapter.
Yes, well, Parsons was involved with the Pasadena OTO, and he never actually met Aleister Crowley, but they corresponded, and, you know, Crowley was definitely aware of Jack Parsons and what he was doing and the Babylon working, but I think Crowley didn't approve of some of Parsons' experiments in magic, and I guess sort of felt they were ridiculous as far as, like, attempting to produce the moon child, and, you know, there's some correspondence by Crowley, you know, which sort of denounces what they were doing there.
Yeah, that was with L. Ron Hubbard, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was with L. Ron Hubbard, so, you know, maybe his instincts were right there, you know.
You know, you see his influence on a lot of people, not only, you know, Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, but you also see it in, you know, Anton LaVey aped a lot of his stuff when he wrote the, you know, the Satanic Bible.
Yeah, definitely with the Enochian calls, and yeah, and that's an interesting book. But yeah, I think that gets really far from what Crowley was, you know, promoting. It's a whole different trip. But yeah, he did borrow a lot, or just actually lift a lot, literally, from Aleister Crowley.
So what do you think of Anton LaVey and that whole scene?
It's not really my thing, and I mean, a lot of people are interested in it, and I think it's, you know, was a success, at least for a while. But it's not really, I mean, Crowley was a very spiritual person.
Right.
And, you know, his life was really based upon that, you know, at the core. And Anton LaVey is a completely different. It's more philosophical, and it doesn't seem like he believes in magic, you know.
Yeah, we have a Winter Light coming on in June. He's going to talk about all that. He wrote a book about LaVey's sister, and I believe he's got a lot of ties to that. I don't know. I've read the Satanic Bible a long time ago, my younger days. But definitely going to get into that in June a little bit with him, just to learn about it, for the shock mostly. But nonetheless, should be a good one. But as far as, here's one that someone asked that I've never heard of. I don't know if you have, but we'll see. Do you know anything about Joseph Sadowny, Sadony? He was a West Michigan prophet who knew Crowley. Someone asked that question. You ever heard of that dude?
No, that seems pretty obscure, right?
Yeah. I figured it was, but yeah, Joseph Sadowny. I have no clue who he is, so maybe somebody will look into him one day. But let me see. Oh, here's one that definitely I'm interested in. What did he mean? For instance, I'll read the title of the show to you that I have that's going to go in the archives. The Church of Mavis, Brian Butler, Aleister Crowley, Tribute to the Beast 666, Occultist, Mystic and Ritual Magician, Prophet of the Religious Philosophy of Thelema, and who ushered in the new Aeon of Horus, loved and scorned and feared, Summoning of Lamb. What could you tell us about, what did he mean by the Aeon of Horus?
Okay, the Aeon of Horus is that's what was prophesied in the Book of the Law. He believed that the Aeon of Osiris was basically Christianity. And the Aeon of Isis, which preceded that, was more paganism. So that was sort of the matriarchy and the patriarchy, and then the Aeon of Horus is the Aeon of the child, if that makes any sense.
Is there an Aeon of Set? Does that one came and passed?
Well, there's people that have postulated the next Aeon, several people. You know, there's one, the Aeon of Ma'at. And I think there's been, you know, someone that said the Aeon of Set, and even Jack Parsons wrote a fourth chapter to the Book of the Law, but I don't know who, you know, Crowley's gone now, so who can officially accept that? I don't know. You know, it's sort of a personal thing, I guess.
Well, what was his draw to these Egyptian gods? They're definitely fascinating. I have this book by Norman Mailer called Ancient Evenings, and basically gets into Set and Horus and Osiris, and he tells the story. It's freaking amazing and crazy. If you've never read it, check it out. Norman Mailer, Ancient Evenings. But what was his draw to that, you know, that pantheon, so to speak?
Well, I think it was, you know, that was a big part of the Golden Dawn. And, you know, to a certain extent, Freemasonry, which he was well-versed in. And he, as far as initiation, it's, you know, the Book of the Dead and all that, and this sort of transformation was something that interested him. And the symbolism was very powerful, and that was used in the Golden Dawn initiation ceremony, you know, all the colors and the figures of the different gods. And he, you know, actually traveled to Egypt and experienced some of that firsthand, which, you know, resulted in the Book of the Law.
So when Crowley was young, he owned the original house that Jimmy Page ended up owning. And he started a very elaborate ceremony. And apparently didn't finish the ceremony. And this is when he had the big breakup with Golden Dawn, apparently. He was doing this long ritual, didn't finish it, went back to London or something like that, and apparently, you know, left a whole bunch of doors open. What do you think about all that?
It's very interesting. I went to that house a couple of years ago, and I made a film documenting that area called Loch Ness Magic, is the name of the film. And, it's, the house has changed now, you know, obviously it's been a long time, and, Jimmy Page no longer owns it. But it's, you know, it's definitely a remote and, strange area, you know, it's right there in Loch Ness. And, he, you know, decided to do this Abramelin ritual to, contact his holy guardian angel, which requires 6 months of solitude. And once you take the oath to begin it, you have to end it, or you will in some way. And he left the ritual to go to London to deal with some drama in the Golden Dawn. And that, I think, that's, you know, that's what interrupted his, the Abramelin working. And, you know, there's been a lot of speculation as to the results of that on his life. You know, people say that after that, you know, everything went downhill for him.
Well, he, in my readings and studies of him, he appears to have, you know, been on a roller coaster of knowledge. He would find something that would interest him, and he would, you know, go head first into it. And, you know, it was just really weird to watch him as a teenager, and then what his philosophy was when he ended, you know, which was love and oneself, and, you know.
Yeah, and it's, and, you know, he's very misunderstood, because he, you know, he was all over the place. He was experimenting with a lot of different things, and, you know, in his lifestyle. And his philosophy was very spiritual, you know?
Right.
And all about, you know, attaining, initiation, you know?
Yeah, he didn't seem to really... He didn't really seem to have a belief system. He was just trying to take in as much stuff as he can to try to understand the whole big picture. He didn't really seem to live in a box like, say, religious people do, or any type of fundamentalism. He was kind of open to anything.
Yeah, I mean, he did have Thelema, or the Book of the Law, you know.
Right.
Quite early on in his career, but that was, you know, basically do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, so that's pretty broad, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty misunderstood passage.
Yes.
People think it's just a way to, you know, do whatever you want. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Or one interpretation is to find what your true will is, which, you know, was part of contacting your HGA or Holy Guardian Angel, and then that's your law, is sticking to what that will is. So there is some limitation that's self-imposed to follow that law.
Right.
Did he subscribe to the harm none theory as well, or?
I think that was tacked on somewhere else, not by him.
Wiccans, man.
Yeah.
So, another, what's the deal with Frater Perdurabo? I say that right if I didn't.
Frater Perdurabo was
okay.
His Golden Dawn, I think it was his neophyte motto, which means, I will endure to the end. And he had several different, for each grade, he took a different magical name. And as his consciousness shifted to each sort of level or grade or plane, he would use a different name in his writings. So these characters reappear throughout his life. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand that. So, exactly what led to his death and how did that take place? As far as what happened?
Just he lived in a boarding house when he was older in Hastings, and he was, you know, I think still taking, you know, drugs, you know, I think still heroin towards the end, but it was rather, just basically died of old age. From what I can understand, it wasn't anything dramatic or violent or strange.
So what do you think of Bruce Dickinson's movie? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, no. Have you?
Yeah, I've seen it. It was, it's funny, but it's kind of all over the place. The guy who plays Crowley is phenomenal. But, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
I have that.
Yeah.
I got around to it. I need to watch that.
Yeah, it's based on his solo album, Chemical Wedding, which is all about Crowley.
Well, yeah, I remember, you know, I'm a fan of Iron Maiden, and the album Pieces of Mind, a lot of the lyrics on there are, like, directly lifted from Crowley, like the song, I think it was called Revelation. It has a lot of just sort of quotes taken
yeah.
out from different...
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know how serious Bruce Dickinson is, if it's just like a passing interest or if he's actually practicing the occult or what he's doing, but you know, I definitely respect Iron Maiden.
Yeah, I mean, you can go like the drummer in Tool, there's quite a few musicians out there, especially the real cerebral ones are really into Crowley. You know, you'll see, like the guy from Tool's got Crowley's sigil on his drum head. Lots of weirdness.
Yeah. I think I've heard about him, that he's a collector of Aleister Crowley memorabilia.
I am so ready for Tool to come out with a new album. It's like, sheesh, do some smack, man, and put out a new album. Christ. I've been listening to Pussy for a lot. I like them, but Tool's definitely. Maybe I'm thinking 2012. I'm hoping that would be good for sure. So as far as his actual magical, you know, aspects and people who practice his magic and, you know, rituals, what exactly, if you could go into some detail about what these, you know, rituals and, you know, what is the final outcome of this magic when they do, you know, do things of Crowley?
Well, I guess that's a very personal thing, but when he sort of branched away from the Golden Dawn rituals, and I guess with the publication of the book Magic in Theory and Practice, he created some rather strange rituals. You know, they incorporated the Book of the Law, and for instance, there's one called the Liber Reguli, or the Ritual of the Mark of the Beast, in which he's inverted all the pentagrams, and there's like this spiral dance, and it deals with the chakras. So it can be rather chaotic, you know, because what you're doing is you're invoking the forces of this new eon into your aura or into your life. And so personally, a lot of the people that I've come into contact with that have experimented with those things, you know, the results are, it can be chaotic.
What is the book 777? I had that book once, but I have no idea. It vanished. What does that book go into?
That is sort of like a cross-reference of Kabbalistic symbolism. So you have, you know, the Tree of Life, which is 10 spheres, and then you have the 22 paths that connect it. And for instance, each one of those paths has a Hebrew letter attributed to it, and a tarot trump, and then a color, and then, you know, maybe an incense, and it just goes on. And then you, there's also gematria, in which you can take a word and add up the letters to equal, you know, a certain number, which is kind of how he got 666 or 418, or, you know, that's a big part of what he did with gematria.
Did he ever get into, like, the seals of Solomon and things of that nature?
Yes, like the Goetic magic he did. And I think that was, he recorded several rituals that he did with that. And I think that he actually did a curse, a few of those, using Goetic magic, the demons in there.
I've noticed the Necronomicon, which supposedly, I believe, was written by Lovecraft, but it looks like some of the Solomon kind of stuff. What do you think about that book? I know it's supposedly fiction, but it's definitely a strange book, just looking through it and stuff. I used to mess with it a lot in my younger days when I was messed up on various things, but do you know any history on that book at all? Does it tie into Crowley in any way, as far as some of the stuff in it?
Yeah, from what I understand is that was actually written by some scholars of Aleister Crowley in New York. And, of course, it was a fictional book, you know, in the stories of H.P. Lovecraft, but the one that was published, I think, was written by people who were very into Aleister Crowley. And, you know, I think that any system, if you, you know, if you practice it and you believe it, is you're going to get some results. And that book's very strange, and, you know, I think that definitely you can get results from practicing those rituals.
Yeah, I messed with that book about 10 or 15 years ago when I did LSD, and let me tell you, not a good idea. Not a good idea at all, for me anyway. But here's something kind of deeply humorous. I don't know if you know anything about it. If you don't, just say so, but I don't know anything about it. But I was coming across some documentaries on some sites I downloaded, and I haven't watched them yet, but one documentary mentioned Crowley and the Loch Ness Monster. Do you know anything about that?
Well, yeah. As I said, I went there to the house and checked out the grounds, and the legend has it that the Loch Ness Monster kind of appeared after Crowley was there, and some people attribute that to, you know, some of the rituals that he was doing there somehow brought in this, you know, entity.
Fascinating. I was wondering, I saw that in that documentary, I downloaded it, and I was like, what in the world? That's pretty far out. That makes sense.
Yeah,
right? Really. A possibility. Definitely. Well, I'm trying to, I'm looking through my topics. Basically, you've wrote a lot of articles on Crowley and various, you know, magazines and stuff, right?
Yeah. I wrote a piece for, Dazed and Confused magazine, about these paintings that by Crowley that were found in Italy rather recently, that were from the period of the Abbey of Thelema. And there was a show, an art exhibit in Paris at the Palais de Tokyo. And I worked with Kenneth Anger on a film called Brush of Baphomet, which documents these paintings.
Cool.
So
what else? I've heard of Kenneth Anger, but I don't know a lot about him. What else has he done? I know I've heard of his name, but what's some other things that he's been involved in? It's a pretty big name, right, Kenneth Anger?
Yeah, and a lot of different circles. He was sort of the next guy after Aleister Crowley. He went to the Abbey of Thelema with Kinsey, you know, the famous Dr. Kinsey, and supposedly made a documentary for television, but which has been lost, but there are some photographs which survived. So he was the first person to go there and remove the white wall that the locals had covered up all of Crowley's paintings on the walls. And so that was, you know, and he was a collector at Aleister Crowley, and he cast Marjorie Cameron, who was the widow of Jack Parsons, in his film Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome as the Scarlet Woman.
Yeah.
And again, this was in the 50s, and he incorporated a lot of Aleister Crowley symbolism in that film. So I think he was definitely one of the first artists to incorporate those things in his work. And
Go ahead.
Well, later on, he was in...
Go ahead.
Well, let me just finish this. later on, in the late 60s, he was in London, and he was, you know, through a gallery in London, he was hanging out with, like, Mick Jagger and John Lennon and that whole crowd, and he had it sort of an influence on pop culture in that way, and that, you know, the Stones have the song Sympathy for the Devil, which mentions Lucifer, and, you know, was possibly a reference to him.
You know, one thing I noticed about the drawing of Lamb, it's also pretty close to his own self-portrait.
Yes.
Do you think maybe there's some confusion with that, that that's actually his own self-portrait?
That's an interesting point. I never thought about that. It's possible, you know, it's, as far as I know, there are no references in his diaries or anywhere which really explain what that is, you know, just the, where it's placed, which is, in the introduction to his commentary on a book by Blavatsky. So it could be considered one of the secret chiefs, or some kind of, you know, non-human intelligence.
Right.
But, you know, that could be an aspect of himself, because there were, you know, a lot of different beings that he channeled, that he took upon a magical name and integrated that into his sort of magical personality. So, on that note, you know, maybe Lamb is another magical name for Crowley.
Or it was him in his alien incarnation in the future visiting him.
Yeah. I think we're getting out there on the speculation.
I mean, you know, or maybe he was just doodling, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, that happens. It's like a lot of people put significance on something that may, for him, just have been a joke, including maybe some of those rituals, you know. So there is some speculation as to what is a joke, you know, what's pulling people's legs, or what they call blinds, or, you know, traps in those rituals.
Yeah, he really enjoyed, he really enjoyed messing with Christians and the established religious, or the established religions of the time. And I know a lot of his rituals were done to piss them off.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to agree that it's fun, you know.
It's
entertaining.
It is very entertaining.
Yeah. You know how some people act on a belief that it's, they probably didn't arrive at themselves. It was handed to them from somewhere else, and then they react violently when someone challenges this belief system, which they've just sort of adopted.
You know? Right. And that's any type of fundamentalism, whether it's the conspiracy theory people, which, you know, the Christians, Catholics, Muslims, whatever, you know.
The Harold yeah. Camping scenario is definitely a good weird metaphor for all that, too, all that that just happened.
Well, there's
He's
a built-in
hiding now.
Yeah, there's a built-in audience for all of that. There's a built-in set of people that will ascribe to, you know, anything you tell them. They need to be led. And, you know.
Yeah, and then they have these certain buttons or keywords, and you can just set them off into a frenzy just by mentioning certain things. Which
yeah,
is,
I mean, Glenn, this is what was so funny about Glenn Beck. When all that was going on with Glenn Beck, I'm like, wow, he's just like Howard Stern, man. I mean, he's got a ton of writers. He's got probably got a psychologist that say, if you say this and use this picture, you know, those people are going to start, you know, they were just programming people. I'm just like, and these people were just, I'm like, no.
Don't insult Howard Stern. Come on. So, one thing I definitely want to ask you about that interests me a lot because I'm a Capricorn, and of course Pan is the Capricorn deity, and the story behind Capricorn is Pan was caught whacking off by the Egyptian gods or something and got thrown into the River Nile and got a serpentine tail as punishment as his dark unconscious. And you're the short film you directed with Vincent Gallo and Kenneth Anger called Night of Pan. I like Vincent Gallo. I've seen almost all of his movies, I'm pretty sure. One of my favorites is Buffalo 66. And then I know he just did one with Ford Coppola, or wasn't it? I can't remember the name.
Tetro, I think it's called.
Yeah. And, of course, I saw his penis, unfortunately, in Brown Bunny.
Yeah.
But what is Night of Pan about? You get into that a bit.
It's a lot of different things on different levels, but the essence is it's about a certain mystical experience that it's called Crossing the Abyss in the system of the AA, or Aleister Crowley's system of the AA. There's between two different spheres on the Tree of Life, there's no path there. And when you go through that experience, you sort of transcend reason or confront a sort of madness. And that's called the Night of Pan. And the way that I made that film, it was very spontaneous. And it was during production that I asked Vincent and Kenneth to be a part of it. So, it kind of developed after they became involved. And, Vincent's an interesting guy. I've known him for quite a while. And, he's, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of his cursing of Roger Ebert.
Yep.
No, yep. I'm not.
Well aware of that.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story where his film was condemned by Roger Ebert. That's like the worst
film.
Brown Bunny.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, and then he publicly placed a curse on Roger Ebert, and later Ebert, you know, became ill. And coincidence, I don't know.
Well, Ebert actually loved the re-edited version of that. It was gave it a good review. He didn't like the first one because I don't think, did Vincent even edit that? I mean, it just kind of was.
You know, I don't think I ever saw that particular cut, so I don't know. But you know, I don't. Maybe he didn't want to be cursed again. You know, but maybe there was some pressure there.
Yeah, and that was a hell of a place.
I thought the film was great, you know.
Yeah. But that was like the you know, if you're going to curse somebody with cancer, that's a pretty bad place to get it, you know, where you lose your whole jaw and... I mean, that was pretty brutal.
Yeah, what's the chick's name, Brown Bunny, that does business? Chloe something?
Chloe,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's her last name?
Savani?
Sevigny.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's on that weird cult HBO show. I've seen her in a few other things, too. I forget the name of that show where they're all in some weird religious cult on HBO.
And yeah, Big Love.
Yeah, Big Love.
Yeah,
the
Winona
Ryder or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Winona Ryder was supposed to be doing that. I know she was there for like one day and for like some reason didn't do the movie. I guess she was originally cast for that.
Oh, yeah, I heard something about that, and then she had some problem with the wardrobe or something. I can't remember.
It wasn't the blowjob?
I don't know. That might have been it. I don't know.
Yeah. What was the movie that he just did with Ford Coppola? What is that called? Do you know? It starts with a T? Tetro.
I think it's pronounced Tetro.
Yeah, I saw that. I like that. That was pretty good.
Yeah,
there's
some
weird movie he was in when he went to Mars. I can't remember the name of it. It was okay. It wasn't like the best movie ever, but I saw it like late on night on TV, and I think he went to Mars, and they were like going around the catacombs in Mars, and there's aliens and stuff. It was pretty funny. But so what are some future projects that you have planned as far as filmmaking? Is there anything else in the works?
Yeah, I'm working on a feature film right now, which is, you know, I don't want to get too specific, but it's definitely, you know, it's an expansion on what I've done before. It involves the cult and sort of experimental techniques, but it also has more of a narrative structure.
So it's about the occult. What do you mean by feature film? Is it going to be like at theaters, or just, you mean on, come out on DVD?
Yeah, like a full, yeah, like, you know, 70 minutes, like, you know, because mostly what I've made so far are short films.
Cool. What is the, some of the artists you perform with, Christian Death, some of the other ones. Von L.M.O., Moving Unit.
Roz Williams was the original singer from Christian Death, and I toured with him in Germany and recorded a live album, and he was interesting guy, definitely into the occult and magic, and expressed that in his art. And unfortunately, he passed away. He committed suicide on April Fool's Day, I think it was 97 or 98. Yeah. And Von Elmo was, I think he's still around, a artist from New York. So he was like a part of that whole scene in the like late 70s, early 80s. And I played with him in the 90s. And he was very into extraterrestrials and magic and the surrealism. His shows were very intense, his performances. He would often have James Chance come up and play, who was another sort of famous no wave musician. And, it was kind of like almost like Hawkwind, but mixed with some of the more like modern elements. If that makes
sense. I'm surprised there's not more. Maybe I'm just not aware of more bands and stuff that, you know, have the UFO element involved. I've always wondered why there wasn't, which there may be. I mean, as far as, he incorporated this Von Elmo, he incorporated that into his, like, stage act and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I think he actually had, like, a NASA suit that he would wear. And,
nice.
But it was in a very dark way. It wasn't very, you know, I guess that's the problem, is it's difficult to do the alien thing without seeming like a crackpot, or, you know, like,
yeah,
to do it in a heavy kind of way, you know, it's difficult to do. And
yeah,
I think that he accomplished that in his performances. You know.
And your band is Technicolor Skull, right? That's the main band that you're in?
Yeah, yeah. That's the, a collaboration with Kenneth Anger, and we've performed, you know, all over the world. We did a show with the Melvins in Austria. Last year we played with Lou Reed and Sonic Youth in New York. And,
wow, awesome.
Yeah.
Where can people check out your music? I mean, is it available just to buy at most places, or is there somewhere online, or?
You know, it's all on YouTube, or I think I still have a MySpace up, but I mainly do live performance, because I consider it sort of a performance art in a way, with sound. So it's not so much something that I feel you can just get an MP3 and experience it. It's the whole, the presence and the, you know, the visuals and the whole thing. It's kind of like a ritual, you know, and you need all the elements there to have the impact.
What are some of the subjects? Is it occult and Crowley type things, as far as the band, the theme?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of abstract, but we're working with those kind of forces. It's very spontaneous. So it's not that we, like, think out, oh, we're going to do this or that. We just kind of do it, and it happens, you know?
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
So do you, like, create rituals with your music?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. And that you can alter consciousness definitely with sound, you know?
Right,
yeah. Yeah.
I was in a thrash band in the late 80s, early 90s, and we were pretty popular in the tri-state area. And anytime we would play our music at, like, a party or something, for some reason, girls would just start kicking the crap out of each other. They would start fighting. It's hilarious.
That was Alter, right?
Yeah.
Okay, another thing I see here that seems pretty fascinating is, let me see. Your writings have been published in books such as Disinformation's Book of Lies, which features Wormwood Star, an article on the life of Jack Parsons' wife and muse, Marjorie Cameron, and it says he has appeared on television internationally. Is that you, or is that her?
That's me. I was on some television shows. There was a show out of Canada. What's that?
Oh, I was just reading about the Showtime Networks and the bio.
Okay. Yeah, so those are two separate things.
Okay.
There was a television series out of Canada, but I think it's since gone, come to the U.S. I know it was definitely in Europe. And it was a documentary on Jack Parsons. And I was on that quite a bit, talking about Marjorie Cameron and Jack Parsons. And the Showtime thing was in development. The biopic of Jack Parsons. So I was consulted on that, as far as, you know, the technical aspects of what he did and his life and Aleister Crowley. But I don't know if that'll ever come out.
Oh, it never came out?
Not yet, as far as I know.
So what, he was into the occult and rockets? That's kind of I don't know if that's a strange combination, but it kind of seems like it. What can you tell us about him a little bit? I don't know a lot about him as far as his life, and I know he conversed with Crowley, and things of that nature, but what were some of his views as far as the occult and spirituality?
Well, I think in the beginning he adopted, Crowley's system of Thelema and was involved with Crowley's order. Then he started to branch away from that and go more into the AA system, which is also a Crowleyan order, but in the AA system, you only meet your superior in the order. And the other order, the OTO, is more of a fraternal order where you're socially involved with the other people. And he did take the Oath of the Abyss and claims to have attained the grade of Master of the Temple of the AA. And towards the end, he started to write about a system of witchcraft. And which is, going more, incorporating some pagan beliefs and, the Scarlet Woman, which is, in part of Crowley's system.
That's something definitely I've heard about, the Scarlet Woman with Crowley. What can you tell us about that?
The Scarlet Woman was, with Crowley, that was like, he believed, in his sort of sex magic rituals that he obviously needed a consort. And a lot of his workings and actual books and things that he did were usually a collaboration of his Scarlet Woman at the time. Like even the Book of the Law was, assisted by his wife at the time. And so that was a sort of position of who his current woman was at the time, was given the title of the Scarlet Woman, and which is the consort of the Beast 666.
So did he have a redhead fetish?
I don't, maybe Parsons did, but, I don't know about Crowley.
Yeah.
As far as that.
What do we know about his sexuality? Was he straight hetero, or he just pretty much Marquis de Sade up?
I think he did a little of everything. Yeah, he was, definitely bisexual. And, he's recorded a lot of his experiences in detail in his diaries. And, but it was all for a sort of a spiritual or magical intent.
Yeah, he didn't limit himself to anything, actually.
So as far as the event, the most RSVPs ever on an event on Facebook, of course Facebook makes up a small amount of our audience, but a definitely great amount of cool people. A lot of our audience is on the site of ours and, of course, the network that we're on, UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And, of course, a lot of the RSVPs are from people that but just want to make note that's the most RSVPs we've ever gotten on a show. It's almost about 400 now, which is pretty cool. And, of course, we have 100,000-plus that listen, and we're on a network of 5 million people, so you can tap into those 5 million if people are just interested in the subject. And that's a good thing about being on a network. If, some of those people see your show and they go, oh, Crowley. So they'll, check it out. But also I wanted to thank Skylar Alfgreen for hooking us up with you. You're definitely one fascinating cat as I learn more and more about you. Yeah, and she...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying we interviewed her a few months back, and that was fascinating as well.
Yeah, she's great. And I can also say that if people want to know more about what I do, I don't know if you mentioned that I have a website, brianbutler.com.
Yeah, I got that on the event. But, yeah, if you want to drop some links, we got about, we got about 20 more minutes. So if you want to drop some links now, go ahead and we'll touch a couple more topics and then depart. So what are some of your links that you want to tell folks?
Well, I think that brianbutler.com, that has everything that links to my Facebook, my Twitter, and, you can reach everything through there. And, you know, I'm doing an event on May 25th in Hollywood at 7 p.m. And that's on the gallery. It's called LAX Art. And that's on Coalinga. You can, you know, check out their website for further information.
And how long have you did art? You do paintings or just sculptures or a bit of everything?
A bit of everything, yeah. I do sculptures, film, and, you know, photography.
Ooh. And I also wanted to let everyone know that we have some upcoming shows that are definitely fascinating. And if you're listening and you know anyone who might be interested in doing the show, you can contact us at the Church of Mavis radio show group on Facebook, and you know, let us know. We're always looking for darkly weird, high strange subjects to discuss, and some of the ones we have coming up, which if you go to Facebook and go to the Church of Mavis radio show group, you can and you join that group, you can get all our events. Just to briefly, some events coming up. We have next week Andy Colvin about the Mothman. He's worked with Dennis Hopper, David Lynch, Butthole Surfers, and he's had some Mothman experiences. He's known as the Mothman Photographer. So that's going to be pretty neat. Also, we have Winter Lake coming in June about, I named it Lucifer in the Sky with Demons, Interview with a Satanist, just to be flashy. we have a shaman coming. We always try to get shamans on the show. I love that. And another great one, Jeff Mudgett, who, this is July, he is related to H.H. Holmes, supposedly America's first serial killer. I don't know if you've heard of Devil in the White City, but Leonardo DiCaprio is making that movie, and the guy's name, Holmes, is known as Mudgett as well. So he actually inherited H.H. Holmes' diary from his grandfather, and we're going to have him on the show, so that should be pretty weird. And his book is pretty terrifying. Actually, it gives me the creeps. But back to Brian in our last few minutes. What are some other quarterly topics that, you know, as we do our grand finale that interest you that maybe we didn't talk about that you would like to add comment on for the tribute?
Wow. It's so vast, you know. He did so much. Recently I've been researching his period in New York, and that was at that time he attained what's called the grade of Magus. And that's also the period that he, you know, created the lamb drawing. And what was interesting about that period is that he had a series of women that he was seeing, and each one he related to a different animal figure, sort of like in the Book of the Dead. And he felt like his life was an initiation, like in the people that he was encountering were these gods that were coming to him. Like, one was called the cat, one was the dog, one was the monkey. And it's kind of funny, but it's also profound and interesting, the way that he interacted with these people, or just his view on the world, you know, and the fact that he recorded it is what makes him really interesting to me.
So he was into, like, animal totems and stuff like that, as far as, like, kind of a shamanistic kind of view, or he just associated animals with people?
Yeah, I think it's going back to more like the Book of the Dead, you know? You have these, and in the Golden Dawn, you have these figures, you know, Set has, you know, the head of a dog, you know, then there's the cat god. With the head of a cat, you know, and he was very into that. And I think that, you know, Kenneth Grant, who's written quite a bit about Aleister Crowley, has an interesting take on all that.
He just passed away, didn't he?
Yeah, unfortunately. He was really reclusive. He was quite prolific. But he was rarely seen in public. There's not that many photographs or interviews with him, as far as I know.
And as far as Book of the Dead, that's one of Crowley's titles, not the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's just one of his titles, right?
No, it would be the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
Oh, okay. I actually have that, and it's definitely strange, to say the least. Definitely fascinating, no doubt about it. The Egyptian Book of the Dead. I need to read it. I've skimmed through it, but I actually need to sit down and check it out completely. Another good one's the Mayan Creation Bible, the Papal Rule. I think I said that right, but I have that too. It's another one I should read. Strange.
Yeah.
Strange stuff. No doubt about it. So what do you think about as far as in occult circles and people that you talk to, and what do you think about all the 2012 hoopla? Is that pretty much people just think it's bunk, or is there any occult significance to it that people mention or anything?
I haven't really followed that too much. It's just sort of my instincts are anything that ever places an exact date on something like that, it just kind of never happens, at least so far, right? Has anyone ever...
I agree.
Maybe it means something in a broad sense, but I don't think anything's going to happen a certain year that has been predicted like that. It's so hard to interpret and, place a date on something like that. But I really can't speak on it because I haven't really researched it that much. So that's just what my instincts tell me,
And we just had the crazy Harold Camping thing, which I kept up with a lot. Of course, I didn't believe it, but it was fascinating, and the media was paying way too much attention to it, which made it even more kind of creepy. And then the fact that women were trying to slit their kids' throats, or actually did, and people committing suicide. It's like camping's like the new... I hate to compare him to Manson. He's a lot more dorkier than Manson, I think. He's definitely became the new Heaven's Gate kind of scenario. And who knows right now how many people are dead in their houses that people don't even know about because of yesterday. So,
I'm kind of out of touch with mainstream media. I don't really watch television or read newspapers, so those things sound really interesting to me. Like, I wish I could follow them more or be aware of that.
You're probably better off that you're not.
It just seems like useless information. It's like so much junk that they're putting out that I don't have time for a lot of it, and a lot, and again, what is it, it's just kind of a strange drama. It's interesting that people react to things like that, like you say, in that extreme way.
Yeah, the lady supposedly tried to slit her kids' throats and hers to avoid tribulation, which I thought if you were a Christian, you would, and everything's cool, that's what you would like. You'd want to go through that so you could go to wherever, Definitely some madness. I couldn't even imagine someone, a mother sitting around saying, I think I'm going to slit my kid's throat so we can avoid tribulation today. It's just insane. Definitely insane.
Yeah.
Did Crowley ever mention the other beings as far as from an alien UFO perspective? He never really got into that much, did he?
I mean, there was his experience with the Enochian system of magic, which, some people have equated with, an alien intelligence. It's definitely outside all the other systems of magic. You know, it's not like the demons of the Galatia. It's, you know, it's a very interesting system, and it's, you know, John Dee originally channeled it with the help of Edward Kelly, and it's very complicated, but Crowley used that quite a bit, and but the thing is, I don't think that, you know, that term aliens wasn't really around when Crowley was alive, as far as I know. Like, that kind of started in the 50s, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Probably around the Roswell time and all that hype and all that stuff. And even that term aliens is kind of not the appropriate term for, you know, interstellar beings, really, to begin with. What, you mentioned demons. Did he believe that there were, in fact, demons and a source of evil, like a Satan or a devil, or, and what, and also,
well,
to tie home as a finale, or last question, I want to know a little bit about Baphomet and stuff. What was his fascination with that, or interest in that?
Okay, well, the first question is, well, these things are just ways of labeling an experience, you know, and at different time periods, we have different labels, you know. You could call it a demon, you could call it the devil, Jesus, alien, but you're having an experience which is outside of what's normal, you know. And those are just really different labels for something that you can't really classify. And, you know, or it's aspects of one thing. Really, it's just, you know, looking at a different point of view, you would see it as a demon, you might see it as an angel from the other side, you know. So, it's really hard to, you know, it's all from your point of view, what's good or evil. And for Baphomet, that was Crowley's motto that he took in the as the head of the OTO. Which was an order that existed that he kind of, that adopted his Book of the Law, and he became the leader of. And, so that's the relation to him, but it's also, you know, sort of an, ancient figure, which, kind of complex. I think he eventually got the number to equal 666 for that one. Yeah, it was just a title that he used, and sort of the god of maybe the Templars.
Is the pentagram supposed to be Baphomet, and is the Satan thing just something they slapped onto it? Is the pentagram supposed to be related to Baphomet on some level?
Yeah, it can be. And again, that's something else that's, you know, very complex. Or can, you know, there, you have the four elements, or, and then the fifth is spirit, and, you know, there's the pentagram ritual, and, a lot of things are related to that, you know. It's
yeah.
Really broad symbol.
Definitely fascinating. I've read a lot about the occult over the years, but I wouldn't consider myself an expert. That's why I love having shows like these, just to refresh and learn more, which is always fun, for sure, to take in more knowledge about these topics. And that's pretty much why me and Guy do the show. We don't make any money doing the show. We just do it because it's cool and fun to do. And if we're lucky, we get some review copies slapped on us once in a while, which is fun, which is pretty good. So, Guy, as we head out, do you have any last questions?
No, I'm good. I got to check out Brian's other stuff here. Pretty interesting
guy. Yeah, definitely great to have you on, and certainly darkly wonderful, and we'll have to get you on again sometime. We definitely enjoyed it, and if you want to, you want to give away some more of your links one more time, just so people will repetition, man. You want to give out your links again?
Yeah, yeah. It's just brianbutler.com. That's Brian with an I. And from that site, there are links to my, you know, under contact under to, for my Twitter and my Facebook, IMDb, you know, MySpace, everything you can reach from there.
So the Dove and the Serpent is what you're doing on the 25th, right?
Yeah, yeah, I'm premiering that film on the 25th, and that'll continue as an installation for a couple of weeks there at that LAX Art Annex space, which is at 1520 Cahuenga in Hollywood.
Hollywood! So real quick as we close out, this will be the last question. It's kind of music orientated, but who are some bands that you really enjoy that have influenced you? I'm trying to get some music hookups here, so I'm just asking. Where's your favorite bands?
You know, I like a lot of the krautrock, like psychedelic stuff. I like Amandul too. I like, actually Bobby Beausoleil, the stuff that he did with his Freedom Orchestra in the 70s, I found was, you know, really interesting. The soundtrack to Lucifer Rising.
Yeah, that sounds like something I need to check out. Sounds pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely something to check out. And what else? You know, yeah, I just... some of the stuff that Coil has done, I think, is pretty interesting. You know, Throbbing Gristle, and then, you know, some of the no wave stuff, like the stuff that Bon Elmo was doing, which never really got recognized in the mainstream. You know, I felt was really intense music.
Yeah, I want to check that dude out, too. Is he pretty much, you can find his stuff, do you have to, like, search for it online in weird places, or is it available, like, at Amazon.com, or what?
I don't know. I haven't checked in a while. I think you could definitely Google and find something.
That sounds like a good time, a dude in a dark astronaut outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy stuff. I dig it. All right, man, we appreciate you doing the show, and it's been a dark pleasure. And this closes out our Aleister Crowley Tribute of the Beast, 666. And also, if you're on Facebook, check out our group, the Church of Mavis Radio Show. And you can also check out our website and forum at mavisincarnate.com. And in July, that's going to change to thechurchofmavis.com. So your best bet would probably just be to go to the group and Church of Mavis Radio Show on Facebook and just become a member, and you'll get all our events for shows and everything. It's been an excellent show. Really enjoyed it, and thanks for doing the show with us, Brian, and good luck with everything you do, and get you on again sometime for sure. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody, we're signing out. It's been a long week, so I think I'm going to bed. All right, everybody, take care. Thanks for listening.